Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is a Tuesday, yes, it is a Tuesday, it must be the Green Roundtable starring Eric Koss and Frank Clemente. Eric and Frank, how are you? I haven't seen you for a while.
I know. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And you look cool and casual.
As always.
Yes.
Right?
He's cool.
He even sleeps that way.
No, he doesn't sleep. But how would you know that? Come on, I want to know. You have
his
pictures?
Mother told me.
Oh, okay. And Frank?
Hey, either way, I don't like where those jokes are going.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want to joke around about that. Now, Frank, you look pretty good, too.
Yeah, my mother dressed me.
Oh, I could tell. So anyway, just kidding. Now, the Green Roundtable, it's a short introduction. Eric, why don't you 30 seconds, tell us a little bit about you, then we'll go over to Frank, and then we have a very special guest.
Well, my name's Eric Koss. I'm a licensed architect and contractor here in Arizona, and I own Koss Design Build, where we focus on residential and specialty commercial projects, doing kind of green and sustainable projects.
Excellent. Frank, Mr. Frank.
Yes, we do backyard makeovers and inspirations. We're doing a project right now, and one of our guest speakers for this afternoon is been helping me with that as well. And of course, it's all sustainable. And we do those in the valley, mostly backyards and residential projects.
Excellent. Now, Eric, we have a very special guest. Do you want to introduce our special guest, line one?
Yeah, we do have a great guest today. We've got Kevin O'Connor. He's on the line, I hope, visiting with us all the way from Massachusetts. Are you there, Kevin?
I am. Good afternoon, fellas.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
So are you, like, standing in 3 feet of water right now, or what's the story out there?
Fortunately, it was a near miss for us in Massachusetts. We had some rain, we had some wind, but we did not feel the brunt of it. Our neighbors in Vermont seem to have gotten the worst of it.
All right, and there's no reports of any of this old house homes being taking some abuse from Irene?
Well, interesting enough, yesterday I sprinted down to Barrington, Rhode Island. We do two projects every year on the show. Our second project this season is a small house right on the water in Rhode Island.
Ooh.
And the 3 days before the storm arrived, the entire side of the house was taken off because we were in the demolition phase. We were trying to pull down tarps in 20-mile-an-hour gusts.
Wow.
And then we pretty much just battened it up and tried to ride it out. And yesterday morning, I'm happy to report, despite the fact that Barrington clocked either the highest or second highest wind in all of New England, our house was saved. There was some damage in the neighborhood, but for the most part, they fared pretty well, and our house came out and through it unscathed.
Oh, well, fantastic.
A new title of the show, This Strong House.
It turns out having half the house ripped off and all the windows opened and the roof strapped down seems to be a pretty good way to weather a hurricane.
Wow, is that really what you did? You kind of let the hurricane go right through it?
Yeah, I mean, the builder, who's a smart guy, and he builds down there quite frequently, decided almost at the last minute that taking the tarp off was probably the better idea, thinking that it was probably going to get torn to shreds anyway and could potentially end up being a giant sail. So they removed that, and they cross-braced the house, strapped the roof all the way down through the multiple floors. And fortunately for us, drywall and insulation was already out, so there's nothing to get saturated, and now we just got to let it dry out. And 80-mile-an-hour winds does a pretty good job of drying it out.
So it just kind of got a little bath.
A little bath, correct. We're doing okay.
Wow, well, that's great. Well, hey, you know, we've had a few different guys on from this old house, and one of the first questions we always have to ask is, how did you get onto this old house? How did you, well, what got you sort of involved in kind of the home improvement or design and construction industry to begin with, and then how did that get you on this old house?
Well, you know, my story is a little different than you probably have heard from the other guys who I work with on the show. Unlike them, who are all sort of multi-generational contractors and have been doing this their entire life, we've got a landscaping expert, a general contractor, a plumbing expert, master carpenter, Norm Abram. Unlike them, I didn't grow up in the trades, and I am not a second-generation carpenter. I, believe it or not, was in banking, a lifelong fan of this old house.
A banker, that's kind of a dirty word these days sometimes, especially in the housing market.
I got out of banking before we all received fat cat status, so I don't feel so guilty about it.
So there's no golden parachute line in your backyard?
There wasn't, no, not for me. But I was in the industry. I actually enjoyed it quite a bit, still do. But my wife and I had just purchased our first house. We were fixing it up. It was a Queen Anne Victorian in dire need of repair, nearly unlivable, although we were in it, working on it. And we wrote to this old house, asked this old house, in fact, a question, which led to a producer coming out to our house and then eventually Tom Silva and the television crew to film just a little five-minute episode for Ask This Old House, our second show. And long story short, 2 months later, they asked me to take off my dark suit and to put on a T-shirt and be the host, the third host of the two shows.
Wow, you must have made quite an impression.
Well, as I like to say, the host job is to be a knucklehead and to get the information out of all the experts. So apparently they were impressed with how little I knew.
You know, Kevin, I also noticed that you were part of a sports finance group, and tell us a little bit about that.
Well, as I said, I enjoyed my job in finance. I was in corporate lending, so we were making large corporate loans, you know, to the tune of $100 million or more, in some cases $1 billion, to large corporations. And my specialty were professional sports teams. So my clients were the Los Angeles Lakers, Boston Red Sox, the Denver Broncos, the Major League Baseball Association. So it was a pretty cool job. In finance, as far as that is concerned, I enjoyed the work. I really enjoyed my clients. It just turned out that I enjoyed this old house a little bit more.
Oh, well, that's great. That's great. So over the years on this old house, I mean, you've seen a lot of different project types. I know you guys go around the country every year to different cities. You see different problems, different housing types. You have different builds. What types of green trends or changes kind of with more sustainability in mind have you seen throughout the course of all the projects you've worked on?
Well, my view is probably a little bit shorter than most, even though I've been doing it for 10 years. The other guys have been doing it for, well, they've been on the television show for nearly three decades and have been in it their entire lives. But we are exposed to quite a bit, and I would say that the education has accelerated on my part. And sort of stepping back from kind of a global view, what I've seen over the last decade is this idea of sustainability and green building, in the many ways we define it, sort of evolving from kind of a silent murmur being whispered by a small group off to the side, and then growing into a very broad-based sort of frothy course where everyone seemed to be talking about it, and that was over the last couple years, to the point where we had entire television networks about it. Just about every firm out there was rebranding themselves as green. So many homeowners were asking for sustainable green renovations and such. And believe it or not, the latest thing that I've noticed is a little bit of a sort of a hesitant backlash on the parts of various folks to some of the green stuff. So there has been an evolution that I've seen, a very distinct evolution that I've seen over the last decade.
Yeah, I think some of the backlash I've seen as well to a lot of products. We use the word greenwashing here a lot of products that maybe didn't live up to what they said they would. Is probably, I'd say, the biggest one that I'm often seeing. In terms of, and then most people that we deal with, it just comes down to, hey, can you save us a buck or make us healthier? And if you can, then we'll go for it. So,
I agree. We see the greenwashing. When we saw sort of all of the manufacturers and all of the individual firms that we deal with sort of dive in, they sort of painted whatever they had green, whether it looked good in that color or not. And I also think it caused the public to sort of feel like things had been overpromised, the folks had oversubscribed. And Eric, I think your point is good. I think at the end of the day, for the most part, people want a more comfortable lifestyle. They want to save a buck, and they want to know that their environment isn't making them unhealthy. And you can call it whatever you want, but unless you sort of deliver those things, most folks ultimately are not interested.
This is Frank. I have a couple of questions. One is, and you sort of touched on it, how would you define the market that you're addressing with your show? Maybe there's an obvious answer to that. Then the second thing is that I do a lot of backyard makeovers, and I'm finding out sort of what you're saying is that people want something that's comfortable. It represents their thinking and their belief systems and how they feel. And it also has a certain amount of economic aspects to it. And when you talk to them about green, they sort of go for it, or sometimes they just, if it's too much money, then they don't want to have anything to do with it. And so these are some of the things that I've noticed when I talk to them about sustainability. So now I just do it, and I don't even mention what it is. I just go ahead and take care of it in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, going back to your first point about the market that we serve, it's fairly broad-based. We have two television shows, This Old House, which is taking a project, an old house typically sort of downtrodden, and making it go through a very large and significant transformation. And we follow that process from beginning to end. And sort of by definition, those projects are larger, they're more expensive, and we consider them sort of the dream or the reach for a lot of our audience.
Mm-hmm.
Folks who sit there and sort of sit back and almost as voyeurs say, wow, wouldn't that be great? Sort of have the best of the best in terms of the trays come into my house and the finest of the finest in terms of the materials and the products all deployed to my home. But on Ask This Old House, which is the second show that we do and is just as popular and just as widely watched, it's the same group of guys, but it's a very different approach where we are literally traversing the country doing very small jobs, traveling down currently to Philadelphia, and we'll be fixing leaky faucets or installing a new hot water heater. And so because of that, I think we're speaking to a very broad demographic. And what most people, I think, associate This Old House with is sort of that trust and quality, because unlike a lot of things that are out there, we're imparting knowledge from people who know what they're doing. And so I think people look to that. In terms of your other comments about what you're finding with customers,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't agree more. If you offer somebody something that's too expensive, our experience is very few people pass on it. Very many people pass on it, excuse me.
Yes.
Because they have to justify the expense. And I think
right.
It is incumbent upon those folks who are in the green business to bring down the cost of these sensible solutions, because otherwise they won't receive widespread adoption. And until they receive widespread adoption, being in the niche market doesn't serve really any of us all that well.
I understand what you're saying. However, what about the possibility of trying to show the value of it? In other words, try to sell the value and the quality of it. so that the price doesn't seem so much of a challenge or an obstacle?
It's a worthy goal. I'm not sure that people should be making these decisions based just on sort of the finances. We've heard this trope many times, but no one asks you about the payback period of your stainless appliances.
Right.
Your granite countertop.
That's right.
So I think it's fine for people to make a lifestyle choice for a variety of reasons. That being said, there are some products, and my belief is that typically the products that have to deal with energy efficiency, that should pass the payback test. And homeowners should be demanding in asking the person who's going to install it or sell it to them, you know, what is the payback period? Because I believe that's really the only analytical way to sort of sort through the choices. There are a lot of different approaches to insulating a house or a lot of different hot water boilers that you could buy. But unless you apply that metric, that payback to it, you're really making an arbitrary decision, and that doesn't have to be the case. So in some cases, payback should be the governor. In other things, it doesn't necessarily have to be.
Yeah, we find that a lot, that we've got some projects where people are just dedicated, and they want to put every green feature and be as healthy and sustainable as they can, and then we go for that. Then we have most of our other projects, we find there's this line at 5 years. Anything that we can get a payback in 5 years or less, everyone's almost always willing to do it. That 5 to 10 year range, it gets a little sketchy. And then after 10 years, unless we're having a really dedicated client, it starts getting really tough fast.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting to hear you say that, because I wonder, knowing that the American household tends to move every five to seven years, I wonder if there's a correlation between those two.
I'm sure it is, because, I mean, so long ago you bought your house, and, boy, you were in it for a long time. And today, a lot can happen in American lifestyle in 5 years that can turn your life upside down. So,
agreed.
But the one of the other things I was curious about is, you said your home, you got selected. That's kind of how you got on this old house. That's how they found out about you. How much do you get involved in the selection process for the different homes that you use? And what's kind of the criteria you really think about for selecting these projects?
Well, the guys who are involved in the show, Tom Silva, Roger Cook, Richard Chathiri, Norm Abram, and myself, we all have a say in what house is chosen for the project. I will admit, certain voices carry more weight. Tom Silva is a general contractor. He's the one who's actually doing the work on these homes. So his voice carries quite a bit of weight. But the process basically goes like this. We have literally tens of thousands of folks emailing us queries about their homes and propositions for their homes to be redone every year. And a very talented production staff will sort through those, cull it down to a small number, and then present it to the guys and to the production team. And what we're generally looking for is a house that's got a story. It doesn't necessarily have to be the oldest house. It doesn't have to be the worst house, but it has to have a story. So, for example, we wanted to talk about the foreclosure process. So we, a couple of years ago, worked on a house that had been foreclosed on and was owned by the bank, and worked on it in cooperation with the city. In 2007, when we believe green was sort of hitting its peak in terms of awareness, despite the fact that we felt we always built green, we headed to Austin, Texas. We went to the first and oldest green building program in the United States, and we worked on a project there. So that's to say that we're looking for a theme that we can tell, because at the end of the day, it is a television show and we have to entertain our audience. And then once we pick the homeowners, they are bearing the cost, although we are bringing some of the most talented craftsmen to the project, and we're also eventually getting quite a few donations from the folks who make the roof shingles and the plywood and stuff, and so their cost for materials comes down considerably. But it's their decisions, in much the same way that if you were renovating your own house, it would be your decisions and the contractor would be working for you. And we just follow that process over the course of the season.
And Kevin, can you hang on for a few more minutes? We are going to take a break right now. We'd love to talk more about other questions, and especially your book that's coming out. And we're on the line with Kevin O'Connor. This is the Green Roundtable, and we'll be right back.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And this is the Green Roundtable starring Eric Koss and Frank Clemente. We have all the way from Massachusetts, Kevin O'Connor, the host of the great show, This Old House. Kevin, I want to, again, thank you for being on the show. You've been magnificent. We still have some questions. And Eric, you have a question. Or is it Frank?
Yeah,
Frank, you got a question.
It's interesting how the materials are they donated? Are they reduced in price? And what percentage of the total cost is contributed by, you know, in terms of the manufacturers, things like that? I guess the whole overall picture.
How we finance these projects is probably, you know, who pays is probably the most frequent
question.
Yes, who pays? The only question that's probably more popular than that is, what do I do about my wet basement?
Yeah, I was going to say, how do I get my house on?
Exactly. It goes basically like this. When we choose a homeowner and we get going on a project, those homeowners have signed a contract with Tom Silva and Silver Brothers Construction. He's our general contractor. And that contract reads pretty much the same way any general contractor's contract would read. So the homeowners initially start off on the hook for the full price. Now, we have lots of friends and sponsors who love the show and would love to see their product on the show. So over the course of the product, lots of products are offered to the homeowners. It's always the homeowner's choice which products they choose to accept. But the savings can be substantial. I mean, I don't get into the numbers in too much detail, but we've seen homeowners benefit from $70,000 or more dollars worth of free items.
Wow.
Entire kitchen cabinet sets and appliances being donated, all the hardwood floors, maybe all of the shingles for the roof, so forth and so on. Now, that being said, they are on the hook, the homeowners, that is, are on the hook for the tax consequences because it is a gift. And what usually happens is by the time you're chosen to be on This Old House, that you are most likely fulfilling a life's dream. You have set the money aside. You've made up your mind what you're going to do. And you realize because of the cost, you can't do everything. And so many times we find homeowners who start off with a budget at a certain number, and then the free stuff comes in, and they end up taking the savings and plowing it right back into the budget.
That answers my question. What do you do with the savings?
Right.
Yeah, they've spent the money in their head before we showed up, and they've got the best guys there to build them a deck they didn't think they could afford, or maybe a master bedroom redo that they didn't think they had initially planned. And it actually explains why our projects grow sometimes to the size that we do.
Yes.
But if you put yourself in their shoes, it's somewhat understandable.
Yeah. I mean, they've already committed the money, so it's just so easy to all of a sudden get so much more than what they dreamed for. So
it is true. It is the American way, I think. effect.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one thing is you've kind of highlighted or talked about some of these different items and aspects of the shows and things like that. And you've got this book coming out where it sounds like you're going to be doing a lot of that, talking about what's going on behind the scenes in this old house, some of the older projects. Tell us a little bit about what's going to be in this book.
Well, it's a brand new book. It comes out September 1st, so this week will be sort of our publication date. And we've done, this old house that is, has done a lot of books in the past with sort of how-to, you know, how to fix your kitchen, how to remodel your bathroom and such. This is different. I mean, it's something that we've never done before. It is a big, beautiful, I'm going to call it a coffee table book because it is rich with photos.
See, I'm an architect. I have a lot of big picture books in my office, so this is right up my alley.
This is. You know exactly what this is, Eric. And so this is one of those. But what's, I think, unique about it is this idea that we've actually never shown off these houses in this way before. So on the television show, we show up and the house is downtrodden and it's old. And then we tear it apart. We put it back together again with the homeowner's dreams in mind and all of the knowledge from the carpenters and craftsmen on the job. And we spend 26 episodes doing that. And then it's finished. But it's not finished, and we don't show it off until the last half, the last episode. And so you see sawdust and roofs being built and plumbing getting done for the bulk of the series over the course of a year. And just when it's beautiful and ready for prime time, the camera zips through, and it's gone in 8.5 minutes. And that was sort of an idea that kind of always, you know, puzzled me. And I have a love for photography, so what we started to do is we actually photograph all of these houses in their finished state, when they are pristine, beautiful, with all the design smarts, all the architectural smarts.
And all the flowers
blooming.
That's
what this book is about. It's a book about the finished spaces of this old house, not the process, the beautiful renditions of these things. And the reality is that the millions of our viewers who watch the show, they've never seen these before. So we're pleased to have it out there. I'm proud of it. It's big and beautiful. And it also tells stories about the different projects and that house in Austin, Texas that I mentioned. We'll give you all the dirty details on how we increased the size of the house by 50% and reduced its energy load by 50%.
I like dirty details.
Like yeah.
It's so all the gossip.
Well, it's a little short on gossip because I got to work with these guys. But there's a couple gems in there.
I see. So it's not the tell-all this old house book.
Okay. Kevin, here's a question. Why is it that you don't have very many women participating in these shows or contractors? It's mostly guys.
Well, yeah, for two reasons. The first is the trades are made up primarily of men.
Yes.
And we're pulling from the trade. Yeah, it is. We're just pulling from the trades. And what's different about our show than I think other shows is everyone who's on our show, I guess except for myself, is really in the trades practicing every day. These aren't out-of-work actors who happen to have grown up swinging a hammer who look good and we're going to put them on TV.
Yeah, like
the crusty old New Englanders who talk funny, but they've got these pearls of wisdom that we have to get out of them. So that's, you know, one of the reasons. We're going to the real trades. But I think the other thing, too, is there's actually quite a few women who work with us, some of them behind the scenes. The head producer for the show is a woman. Her assistant is a woman. And we've had folks in the trade, women on the show before, although to your point, not nearly as many as the guys. And then the final point is the same four gentlemen who have been doing it for the last 30 years are still doing it. I'm the new guy. And there's not a lot of spots because they're just doing it like they've been doing it for the last three decades. And people seem pretty darn happy with seeing their faces on the television every week.
Well, I was thinking about this book a little bit more and how it sounds like you're going back pretty far into, I guess you'd call it the This Old House archives. Did you find any ghost stories creep up, or did you find any almost strange situations when you went back and looked at projects that, I'm not sure how you did it, but if you're, you know, looking at a project that maybe you haven't seen in 10 years, is everything holding up okay? Are you finding out any interesting little tidbits of information there? And are you guys learning anything from that?
Well, I included in the book, since I had to write it, I included in the book only projects that I've been involved with. So that takes us back a decade. It doesn't take us back three decades. Although there are quite a bit of things to learn looking back just on a decade.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will tell you that some of the houses, years after we've departed and I returned, didn't stand the test of time, and you won't see them in the book. So well, they were edited out.
That brings the aspect of maintenance, because you can create this beautiful project, which happens to me, and then a year later, I see it all trashed out by the dogs or whatever. And I wonder if that's happened to some of your projects.
Well, the answer is yes, it definitely has. We live and ride these houses hard, and I've seen some of those. And the purpose of this book was mostly to show beauty. So we didn't; they all didn't make it. And it wasn't because the houses were in terrible shape. They just weren't in tip-top shape. So some of them were not included in the book. I will say that one of the most interesting stories was I went back to a house that we had done 5 years ago. And it turned out to be my favorite project because it was a house that we actually bought. We didn't have homeowners involved, and it's very rare that we ever do that.
Oh, wow. That sounds like it would have been a fun one.
Yeah, it was a dream project for us, right? So we really just broke out all of the tricks, and we just tried everything out. And when we were done, we opened it up to the public so that they could come and see it over the course of a couple months. And we had 10 different designers. We gave them each a part of the house, and we said, go crazy with the kitchen, you go crazy with the dining room, you go blah, blah, so forth. So the house was eclectic, and every room was different. Didn't make really all that much sense when it was all pieced together, but the public loved it. You get the idea. It's a show house for
right.
A couple months. Tens of thousands of people showed up, and then we sold it. I had never been in the house after we sold it, so I went back to photograph it. And it was owned, is owned by this very nice family. And remarkably, just about every room was the same as we left it.
It's a shrine to this old house.
Well, they put their own furniture in it and their designers, and it was probably even looked a little bit better than when we left it. But there was one color of wallpaper in one room and paint in another room. You know, all the different materials and coverings and stuff that we left there for show, they fell in love with it. And I was talking to the homeowner. I said, you know, why is this? And she says, well, I came on that house tour as a public, and I fell in love with it that day and talked my husband into buying it. And a month later, they had owned the place. And I guess you could maybe say it's a shrine to this old house. It was great to be back in the home.
Well, you'll have to go back to it in another 10 years. And you know, I'm not sure how much longer we've got you here, but one thing I've got to ask you before you go, you mentioned that old Victorian that got you onto this old house. What happened to that house?
Well, we call it the Pink Lady because when we bought it, it was pink, of all things, which was a bit of a leap. It had no working kitchen. It was a two-family. My wife and I spent 8 years fixing it up on nights and weekends. We had our first child there. It was a block from the water and a block from downtown. It was the house that led to me getting the job that I love on this old house. And when we had two more children and could no longer, I should say when my wife could no longer carry them all up and down three flights of stairs to get to the backyard, we moved out to a single family. But we couldn't part with it, so I still have it. I rented it out to a very nice family.
Oh, nice.
It's about 4 miles from where I live now. And I don't tell my wife this, but oftentimes when I come home from work, I get off and exit early. I drive by just to say hi.
She's online, too, right now.
I have very fond affection for this house. So I don't want to let it go.
Well, Kevin, before you go, how do people get your book? What do they do? They write you? Do they? Is it one of the bookstores? How does that happen?
Amazon.com or where?
Yeah, absolutely. It's published by a very reputable publisher, Stuart DeBorean Chang, out of New York. It is available in any bookstore and on Amazon.com and online, wherever you can find good books. It's out there. It's available now, so you can pick it up right away.
It sounds magnificent. Kevin O'Connor, thank you so much for being on the Green Roundtable, of course, the host of This Old House. It's been an honor and a pleasure, and we've had the other gentlemen on, too. They've all been great. You guys are great guys.
Well, it was my pleasure to be here. Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, thank you so much. And that was Kevin O'Connor from the host of This Old House. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion. Another special, and we have an in-studio guest this time. This is going to be great. Very interesting topic on colors.
Absolutely.
The psychology of colors, near and dear to my heart.
Can we live with it or without it?
That sounds like women, though. Can you live with them or can you live without them? I don't
know.
Speak
for yourself, David.
Oh, thank you. We'll be right back.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I'm Zeroscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
It's the summer of 2011. Why not change? Why not your company? Why not now? Really? What will it take for you to change and improve your life, your capabilities? It's the summer of 2011. Running out of excuses yet? In this unpredictable economy, is this business as usual? No, this is turnaround business time. Time to improve in the summer of 2011. From business services to technology, marketing to productivity, sales to employee morale, nonprofits to associations. This show addresses today's, not yesterday's, critical topics essential to you and your company. Guess what? In this economy, embrace change or it will continue to confuse you. Leapfrog Forums, taking it to the next level, has been created by and for business challenges, changes, and success stories. Come and talk with us about the vision of change you are living and how that is taking your company to the next level. Let's get our friends and family members back to work now. How? Step up as a change advocate champion and share your innovative and collaborative successes in the workplace with us on air. Tell your story. Leapfrog Forums, taking it to the next level. Innovation and collaboration for growth and jobs. Accomplishing together what we cannot do alone. Call the boss at 602-859-0048. 602-859-0048. That's 602-859-0048. And visit us at www.leapfrogforums.com. www.leapfrogforums.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the Green Roundtable. And again, a special thanks to Kevin O'Connor, the host of This Old House. Guys, wasn't he phenomenal?
Yeah, it was outstanding. It's always great to have someone from This Old House on.
We've had them all on, I believe, haven't we?
I think there might be one.
You know what we should have? Let's have one of their clients. One of the homeowners.
Or we could have a reunion.
Yeah, reunion.
We could do a remote from Boston.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, that'd be cool, right?
We could do a This Is Your Life, but This Is Your House.
And I'll be one of the guys in a raincoat with the next hurricane, and I'll say, see how windy it is? I've never knew. Why do people do that? It's like, it's so funny. One guy just got blown off into the harbor. And he goes, yeah, it's windy. Okay. Anyway, we get the point. So anyway, we have another
special guest.
Yes, an in-studio guest. Frank, do the honors. Who do we have?
We have none other than Kathleen Hope. And Kathleen has a background, very diverse in art and theater and teaching. But she's going to talk today about color and the psychology of color.
Well, welcome, Kathleen.
Thank you.
This is nice
to be invited.
Absolutely. Well, tell us a little background about yourself.
Well, first of all, I moved here about a year and a half ago from Minneapolis, where I basically for 13 years, I had my own business. I was a color consultant. I worked with a lot of architects, builders, designers, because my background really is in color psychology, which is a little bit more training than your average like interior designer would get. But I also started out as a decorative painter, so I would do murals for people and full finishing, Venetian plaster, and specialized in exteriors and more the historical colors of the Victorians and a lot of the older houses in the St. Paul kind of area. But I chose to move here for many reasons. One of the reasons was I really had a hard time with the weather there. And I just...
The cold or the humidity?
Everything.
It does get humid there.
Yeah, it does. But I just... I've realized that I'm just not a cold weather person. And I really had a hard time. Like, I wasn't getting enough sunshine. And obviously, it affected my mood. And I just came here, and I fell in love with the desert, and I'm very, very happy to be here.
Now, Kathleen, why didn't you paint your room with bright colors to change your mood?
She couldn't bring it outside.
Okay.
Let's forget about that.
No further questions. It's your witness, Eric. <Yes. No. laughs>
But anyway, you love it here, and that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And so now what kind of work are you doing now?
Well, when I came to the Valley, I really didn't have a job. I mean, I basically packed up my van, left Minneapolis, and said, that's it. I've had enough. I've got to be where there's sunshine. And I also wanted a place where I could paint outdoors. I'm an artist. I'm I'm a mixed media painter. I'm also a teacher. So I teach classes in mixed media painting. I also teach color classes, mostly geared towards the color psychology. But anybody in the design field can take my classes because it's more geared to looking at color as, you know, more than the visual side, the more psych.
How a person responds to color?
Yes.
And how they feel in color?
Basically, how we examine our and observe our environment and basically how it affects our behavior. You know, there's a reason why we walk into a restaurant or someone's home and we feel immediately connected or very soothed or there's something right about it. And sometimes if we haven't studied color or design, we don't really observe and pay attention and really know what we're feeling. But there is science behind it, and there is a reason why we feel good in an environment when everything is right with texture, with color, with light, with design, the right design,
shapes.
Right shapes, right mm-hmm. composition, just like a painting.
Now, is it an individual thing, or is it most people react the same way to certain colors and textures, or is it just really individual?
I think that color is very individual. And, you know, it really goes back to also when we were children. So if we think about certain positive and negative associations with color, each one of us, and I'm sure each one of you, can think about either a positive or a negative maybe side of a color when we are growing up that we still carry that with us when we become adults.
So how would you design then, or what type of consulting would you give, like to a restaurant or some commercial or even residential, the type of colors if it's an individual thing? I mean, because are you catering to certain group that maybe have the same taste, or how would you do that? That sounds challenging to me.
It is, but if you have the knowledge and what colors do in an environment, it makes it pretty simplified. For example, most restaurants, places that you eat, you really want to choose more warm colors. So the reds, the oranges, the gold, yellows, more saturated colors that are warm. The reason you want to do that is because they're more social colors. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is social colors get people relaxed. They get them to communicate. Mm-hmm. Whereas cooler colors are a little bit more introverted colors. So they're more intellectual colors. They don't initiate conversation as easily as plus warmer colors make people eat more, stay longer.
Oh.
So it's just like the whole wine thing, you know, you drink wine and you eat more.
Or Dos Equis, stay thirsty,
yeah,
my friends.
It's the funny. I was just watching a reality show on TV where it was working in a restaurant, the things they were doing. And one of the things they brought up was the warmer colors. They were using red. They wanted to get as many reddish drinks on their menu and get as much red into the food on their menu. Because, yeah, they said it opened people up. They'll eat more. And I think for whatever reason, this particular restaurant owner believed that women, he wanted to be a restaurant and a bar that brought in a lot of women, so he felt that women associated with red more and that they would just feel better being around it. So all his drinks and all his food, lots of red.
So I should have wore a red shirt today?
Yeah, apparently, instead of the blue.
Frank, you
then the women would be coming over
exactly.
On droves.
So what does this tell you? We all have different color shirts.
Sort of.
I have a dark blue. You have sort of a gray, I think?
Grayish blue.
And a light blue for Frank. What does that tell you? Does it tell you anything?
We're all boring, cold, standoffish guys.
But I do like to eat.
like you said, when I first came in, they were surprised that I wore gray
yeah.
and black. There's reasons for that. Well, first of all, I'll point out that blue is the overall favorite color of most, no matter what culture you came from.
Really?
Blue is the most popular color.
Right, for men and women.
Yes.
Really? Is it dark
yes.
or light blue? Or does it matter?
White blue.
I guess when I talk about blue, I say just basically a medium blue. Okay.
Wow.
But the other reason, I'm not a very extroverted person. I am more introverted, and therefore I usually choose colors that I wear. And for the inside of my house, like the colors on my wall, introverted people tend to choose colors that are a little bit more lighter in color and cooler rather than highly saturated and warm. And so therefore I do wear pattern, but I tend to do that because of my personality. Also, there are certain choices of colors that you'd want to wear when you speak and to be I guess to be trusted and also to send the message and be believable. So there are colors like that you shouldn't wear, and there are colors that you should wear for people to get the message across.
So it's context related, Dave.
So
the context where you place yourself and how color affects that.
Totally. Mm-hmm. It is. Color is about context. It is. So it's like me not wanting those bright saturated colors on my walls and what I wear, but when I paint, it's a completely different situation.
So you mentioned trusted. If you want to be mm-hmm. trusted, there's certain
yes.
colors. What are those colors?
Typically, when you speak, you should wear black, charcoal gray, blue.
Dark blue?
Yeah, you can wear dark blue.
He's not
light,
giving up on the dark blue.
Just don't wear that light pastel blue.
Oh, that's bad.
What?
Well, then we'll have to put a flower on your head there.
Oh.
Well, you probably could wear a splash of it, but light blue is
give
probably
a splash.
What is light blue? By the way, I have a dark blue shirt
yes.
on.
Yes,
but what
for,
is light blue? So, so
for people who are listening.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes light blue can be
masculine.
Sometimes, well, it can sometimes be associated with childlike.
Oh.
You know, like light blue. Mm-hmm. It's just not a very colors that when you speak, you need to have stronger colors, but not really highly saturated colors like reds and oranges.
Because in the old days, I remember, if you want to be a power
that's
thing.
That's what I was going to bring up.
A red tie, right?
Right. You wore a dark suit with a red tie.
Yeah.
And that's okay, but a better color would be maroon. Yes.
Oh, maroon is
and
good.
And the reason being is that's a color combination. Situation where when you combine two colors, the more simple that I guess I back up here, the more simple color combinations that you can choose to give a message, the better. Because think about it, Monet's garden, there's so many colors that there's just so much information going on because they're all fused together. Whereas if you're choosing two different colors, like think about when you think about charcoal and burgundy, they're a very classic color.
Oh.
It's very stately. It's also very respected. So there are certain colors, like gray and red, might be a little bit too strong. It might not send those same messages. So like a highly saturated bright red with gray might be a little bit more modern. It might be a little more flashy, not as trusted. So that's kind of the difference.
So do you think these colors will translate over the radio?
Good question. People kind of look at me with a deer in headlight sometimes when I talk about colors, because being an artist, I know how to mix colors. I know what goes in colors. So when I talk about blue has a little, this blue has a little bit more red, but it has a little green or has a little yellow in it, people just look at me like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So it is kind of hard to describe because so many colors have different names, that's why sometimes I try to talk about what colors have in them so that there's a little understanding. Like, for example, burgundy has a little bit more brown and a little bit more blue than red.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this then. Let's say you want to bring some flowers home to your special significant other. What color would you suggest? Or does that matter? That sounds like a question for our dating show.
Avoid red.
Avoid red?
Really?
Why
red
do you
roses?
Say that?
Well,
yeah.
I in the past I've taken red and they say, oh yeah, thank you very much. Because
that's your experience.
Every guy, well, I know, I don't give him red. I give him oranges, yellows, whites, purples, whatever. And it's something different. But I have a lady friend who works in a flower shop.
Oh.
And she owned it. And she says, every guy that came in, I want to get some red roses. She would say, now look, let me tell you something. You better stop doing that, because every guy's giving the little lady roses. So she would pick out, she'd find out what the woman was like, and then she'd create an arrangement with his proper colors.
How about a dark blue rose? Okay, just kidding.
Well, you know,
so
that was a challenge by Luther Burbank. He was trying to create a blue rose, but that's another story.
Well, I love that. So Kathleen, go ahead. What would you recommend?
I guess the best way to kind of go into that story is just, I like what Frank said, to know the person, to know what colors that they like. If somebody gave me red roses, I probably wouldn't like them.
Oh, wow.
So I tend to like yellows and corals. And so it's about knowing the person and observing. Even if you don't know them, observing what colors they have.
What they're wearing.
Exactly. Well, yes and no. I mean, yeah, okay. I would say it'd be more what they have in their house, accessories they have in their house.
Okay.
So if they have accessories in their house that are like more saturated colors and you see hints of red, then you're probably safe to do red. But what we wear is not necessarily an indication of what we like. Like I said, context. It's all about context. So it's very complex. Color is something that I will study the rest of my life, because there's just so much to know about it.
Now, you mentioned something very interesting. What I think you said, what we wear is not often what we like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. You've heard of neuro-linguistic programming?
Mm-hmm.
Tony Robbins is the most well-known. It's all the study of human excellence. But let me ask you this, because everyone will pick, and I'll ask everyone this question. When you go shopping for clothing, what's your first thought when you pick it out? Your first selection criteria, we'll call it. Is it something you see, something that you would hear, or something that you feel? Eric, you go first.
Mine would definitely be something that you see.
Okay, cool. Kathleen?
Yes, I would say for the most part, yes. With picking out clothing, it's something that I see. The colors that I know look good on me.
And Frank, I bet yours is a different answer. Because mine's a different answer.
I probably go two ways. I do what Kathleen is saying. Does a color go good with me, my skin tone, and things like that? And then also, does it fit?
Oh, okay. So maybe kinesthetic, what you feel.
And is it purely based on color? Because when I say what I see, I'm thinking about more about the texture or the detailing or those types of things when I'm looking at it visually.
That would be visual. So there's visual, auditory, kinesthetic. I'm like, I select stuff at least clothing, context related, based on how it feels first.
Wow.
And then I'll try to look at the colors. And
so that's so funny because if something's uncomfortable but I think it looks really good, I'll wear it.
See, and that, I'm the opposite. That's interesting. Isn't that interesting,
that's
though?
That's the case of what he's wearing now.
Well, you make a good point. And the point is, as Picasso said, I paint what I think, not what I see.
Mm.
And I never really, before I got into painting, I really didn't understand that whole idea, really, until I started studying color psychology and also until I started painting. Because I remember my first painting class, going into the classroom, and everybody had their, like, photos that they had taken of these beautiful landscapes, and they were all trying to paint them exactly the way that the photo was. And I tried that. But it never worked for me because I paint like Picasso. I paint what I feel and not what I see. And that's part of the reason I think I'm an abstract painter is because it's my experiences. It's I listen to music, which evokes like certain colors. So that's it's a good point.
Wow, and can you believe the show has ended already? That just zoomed by, zip by.
Yeah, it did.
But Kathleen Hope, thank you so much. How do people get in touch with you?
Well, I work actually at Patio Furniture, and I do the outdoor space planning for people. It's a high-end furniture store. But I also, if you just go to my website, kathleenhope.com, and my color consulting site and my art site is in one. So when you go there, you can either navigate back and forth between the color consult and the art site.
Thank you so much. In 5 seconds or less, Eric?
You can reach us at kossdb.com. That's KOSS.
And Frank?
Frank, it's frank3773@q.com.
And thank you so much, Kathleen, for coming in today.
Thank you.
Really appreciate
That's
it.
Right.
See everyone next month on
That's
the
right.
Green Roundtable. Thank you.